Support comes from the St. Louis Chamber Chorus. Season 68 concludes at John Burroughs at 3 p.m. on May 26th with the United Nations commissioned Voices of Today by composer Benjamin Britten, featuring youth and adult singers. Tickets at chamberchorus.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. People usually associate family secrets with negative circumstances and outcomes. But for my guests today, an untold story revealed shortly after a new baby's arrival expanded one family beyond their imaginations. Juliet Simone and her mother, Rebecca Massey, shared that story in the StoryCorps Airstream trailer last October. At first, it was a mother and daughter talking about how they each started their families. So, a common enough conversation between loved ones, right? Yet the pathways, or as we'll learn, pathway, that Rebecca and Juliet took to motherhood were not typical. Juliet Simone, mother of two, and her mom, Rebecca Massey, join us today to talk about it all. Rebecca and Juliet, welcome to St. Louis on the Air, and happy early Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So, Juliet, the story that you two told about your family, it took many twists and turns, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But we are going to reveal one right off the top. You both decided to pursue parenthood through sperm donors. Now, the twist is that, Juliet, you only learned about your mom's experience with conceiving through sperm donors and you and your brother's biological dads after the birth of your first child. So let's take a breath here. What exactly blew that secret open, Juliet?
Yeah, that's right. It was the birth of my first son. And he was born in November of 2019. And like all newborns, had a newborn screening. And he tested positive for a genetic disorder. And it's not a super serious one, but it is the tests nowadays are sensitive enough to pick this up for the first time. Mm-hmm. So there hasn't been that many cohorts of children that have tested for this. And so the geneticist at Children's wanted to learn more about this medical condition. And so it was X chromosome linked. So we knew I had it, and they wanted to test my near family. So my mom and my brother got genetic testing. My father had already died, and I tested positive as expected, but my mother and brother tested negative. So that meant that I got the X chromosome with that disease linked from my father. My dad was from Scotland, and so I was getting ready to contact all my cousins and their children in Scotland and alert them to this newfound genetic disorder. And my mom said, "Honey, I have a secret that's going to rock your world."
And did it rock it?
Oh, it rocked it.
Yeah. I mean, after trying for a baby and to have that shared with you, I mean, what was your reaction?
Well, my first reaction was, well, that makes sense. And then, are you my mom? So my mom sat me down and said, "Honey, 40 years ago, your dad and I made a decision." And that's when I was like, I think that's when my jaw started to drop. And then she let me know that the man who raised me and the man that I called dad was not my biological father, and that my brother Alex and I were likely half siblings and not full siblings that we had grown up to think. Mm-hmm.
So, Rebecca, let's rewind back to when you were trying for babies. I mean, what circumstances led to sperm donors to start a family?
My husband, David, was 11 years older than I was at that time, and he already had children, and he did not want any more. So he had a vasectomy. And I, at 24, said, "Fine with me, you know, I don't want any kids." So that was just okay. And then when I turned about 28, it hit me just like a brick in my head. Oh my God, I gotta have a baby. I gotta have a baby. And I think that I would have walked over, you know, hot molten lava to have that baby. And we went through a lot of scenarios about adopting or fostering. And I don't even know how we came up with sperm donor at that time, but that's the route we decided to go on. Mm-hmm. And we decided not to tell them. And that was really my decision. It didn't have anything to do with him because mm-hmm. I think he would have done whatever I had suggested. But I didn't want them looking at him any differently. And when you're planning all this, you're not thinking about future adults. You're thinking about little babies
who
don't care. And you know, the secret just, I never knew how to start the conversation. And so it just kept going.
Mm-hmm. And when was this happening? Like what year, what time frame?
It was in 82 and 83. And then after I, after I had Juliet, I went back for a second dose with Alex and had my son, Alex. Mm-hmm. So.
Were there any concerns that you and your late husband had about, you know, like what people might think, or was it really just a matter of this is the decision we're making for ourselves uh-huh. and this is how we're deciding to proceed?
We never told anybody in the beginning. We never told anybody. And I can remember my dad saying when we got married, now I don't want, he says, I don't want you to do anything stupid now to have babies. So I knew I wouldn't tell him. So that was out clearly. And we just kept it our secret for many, many years. I finally told somebody, two of my friends, way down the road when the kids were like maybe 10 or 12, but otherwise it was kept a secret. Mm-hmm.
And what was the process like, the sperm donor process?
It was really very, very clinical, I can tell you. You just, you know, you just watched your temperature chart. That's as best we had in those days. And to go in and ask for a baby, all I asked for was, my husband was tall and blonde and blue-eyed, and that's about all you had in 1983 mm-hmm. to ask for. I did ask. I didn't want anybody that had any weight issues because I had enough of that, and I didn't want want my poor kids to have two doses mm-hmm. of that. And otherwise, that was it.
Yeah.
And then you would send in your temperature chart, and they would call you and tell you to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was all there was to it.
So, Juliet, there's another thing that you have in common with your mom, and that is that you also had a sudden, I need to be a mom moment. And, I mean, how much of that feeling was a surprise to others and even to you?
Yeah, I mean, I really felt the same sort of brick on the head. I think I was 29. I think that was, so we were very close at the same age in life as well. And I'd always known that Mom had that moment, so I knew that it could happen to me. Mm-hmm. And but like Mom, I was like, nope, not really interested at all until I was like, it has to happen or I'm going to explode. I had been married before my current marriage, and we had had two miscarriages, and then I had a break in relationships, and then I had another partner and had another miscarriage as well. And so it was really after that relationship that, kind of like Mom, I was not making the best partner decisions in my life because I had such a baby fever. And so I think it was at that point then a best path for me to go forward to be a single mom on purpose at that stage in my life. And that's when I was when Mom was like, have you thought about using a sperm donor?
Okay. I mean, and what did you think of that?
I was like, I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, really, my biggest concern at that point in life, which I was 35 or 36 at that time, was really just being able to afford childcare as a single parent on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then Mom said, well, I'll take care of the kid. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, then done. That seems like an easy decision for me then.
Yeah. So the process for you, I mean, Rebecca, you said you kind of gave these a handful of characteristics or traits that you were looking for. Was it also that simple for you?
No, because of, the technology, in genetics and genetic science that have, accelerated over the last 40 years, it was a very different experience. So, first of all, it didn't have to be local. There were plenty of websites. The specimens can be cryogenically frozen and shipped from anywhere in the world. And because, you can test your DNA at home for under $100, the donors were not in present day even pretending to be anonymous.
Right.
So you can, you can see profiles, you can see pictures, because they will also be, they'll be able to be found one way or another.
Right.
And so I think the idea of donating in the early 80s is also extremely different than today.
Right. So while you were navigating after the suggestion for sperm mm-hmm. donation was made, you're navigating healthcare, working with sperm donation facilities, you found love in an unexpected way. Juliet, tell us how you met your now husband, John Henry.
Yeah. So I had already started the sperm donor process for a few months and hadn't gotten pregnant yet. And a friend of mine said, "Hey, Juliet, I went out with this guy a couple times. I met on, a dating app, and we're not a good fit for each other, but I think the two of you would really hit it off." And I told him about you and your situation. He doesn't have any kids of his own and never been married, and he's interested in meeting you. And I was like, okay, I gotta meet this character, right? Like, who would take those that list of credentials and say, yeah, let's go out on a date? And so we went out and we hit it off. And the next, I think it was our second date, I was like, all right, like, I know Jen told you this, but this is a path I'm going down. And, depending on how we're doing or whatever, you can be along on this path with me or you can go your own way. But this is my life right now.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like, I'm up for whatever. He kind of sort of said he wanted to be a dad. But when I got pregnant just a couple months later, I was like, it could be you, right? You know that. He's like, yeah, well, that's what you wanted, right? And I said, I did. And so, we fell in love over, while I was pregnant and not knowing if this little baby was his biological son or child or not. Mm-hmm. And he had the choice. I left it really up to him if he wanted to be a partner and a father. And he had stuck around and sort of proven yes. Yeah. And it was on the day our son was born that we learned he was, in fact, the biological father, even though we were sort of thinking he wasn't.
Right.
Through our blood types. We were the talk of the maternity ward that week.
Oh, I'm sure you must have been.
Yeah.
We're talking with Juliet Simone and Rebecca Massey, daughter and mother, about how they became mothers and the revelation of a secret and what happened thereafter. So, Rebecca, let's go back to when Juliet was telling you about John Henry. And then meeting him, I mean, what were your first impressions? Did you have any apprehensions?
I have to say no. I really don't. I didn't. I was just worried that she was rushing things, because I knew that baby component was there and it was so strong. And I really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Worried or concerned. I just let her make her own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
She was grown, so
yeah.
I don't worry about that.
And how did you know, Juliet, that that he was like John Henry was legit?
It is not super fun to be dating a pregnant lady when it's the first time you're really getting to know somebody. I was tired and, I wanted to just take naps on the couch on Fridays. And the fact that he stuck around and was so kind and good to me and understanding about this and able and willing to sort of talk about the future as a dad. I mean, it was kind of in abstract terms at that point, because I think we were both so willing to just sort of step into the unknown together. But he was so open and willing to do that with me that just kind of thought I had somebody special.
Yeah.
And I really, really do. He's a very special guy.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people wondering, does John Henry have any brothers who are single?
He does not. Sorry to disappoint.
So let's get back to that moment when you learned that your dad was not your biological father, Juliet. So you got as many answers as you could about mm-hmm. your first child's genetic condition. What was the next step that you took to learn about your bio dad? I mean, did you jump right into seeking family out?
I did. I mean, that was the first thought that came to my head is, holy cow, I might have a whole other family to discover, and what fun that sounded like. And, you know, so I emailed my cousins in Scotland and my half-sister that I grew up with, as Suzanne, and, you know, talking to them and just saying like, hey, I'm not biologically related to you all. And they were like, interesting. Well, I mean, you know, obviously we're still family. And I was like, yes, that was exactly the answer that, you know, I was hoping for. Mm-hmm. And really, I think we've all been closer than ever through this process. And so, no, I was like, how fast can I get a DNA kit to my house? You know, and it was also right when COVID started. And so I had to wait an excruciating week until my mom was able to share this news with my brother. Mm-hmm. He was out of town for work or something, and she couldn't wait to tell me because it was going to start impacting others. And so I had to wait a week, and Alex and I are very close, and I couldn't believe that I couldn't share this like earth-shattering news with him right away. But then once he found out, he had the exact same reaction I did, which was kind of like, huh. That makes some sense. Are you my mom? And he was less enthusiastic about what the possibilities were about other siblings, bigger family than I was, but mm-hmm. he certainly went along with me. And so we did the Ancestry brand of a DNA kit, mm-hmm. and neither of us got any close family hits, but I did, you know, we did find out our ancestral origins. And to my surprise, instead of being 50% Scottish, I am 50% Norwegian,
okay.
Which was like, oh, well, that's close. Yeah, that makes sense too, I guess. And so we didn't find any close hits, but my brother found a third cousin that had a huge family tree built in Ancestry,
oh.
messaged her and said, hey, here's my situation. And within 3 days, she found his entire biological family, and
wow.
we were in touch with living relatives within days.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
Rebecca, for you as Alex's mother, what were you seeing in how he was experiencing this news, and then, you know, the revelations that came from doing these ancestry tests and that sort of thing?
You have to know my son to understand the answer to this, but he's extremely difficult to read, and
oh.
he has been since he was little. And but I could just tell, though, in his behaviors that he was okay with everything, you know. And the more and more we searched into and finding family, you know, I think he. I think both Juliet, I'll speak for you here, felt that their dad, David, actually really did a good job
mm-hmm.
of raising them. And Alex has, since he found a sister and a brother and another, what do you call them?
Diblings?
Diblings.
Diblings, yeah. I forgot. Diblings, yes. And he has made so much contact with them. He has been to every one of their homes. He's met with them several times and is just absolutely enthralled with
yeah.
his other family.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think culturally, that is not always the case, you know, depending on individual families and also, you know, other kinds of cultures. Now, you mentioned a half-sister, Suzanne. How did Suzanne respond to all of this, Rebecca?
Well, I think I was the saddest for her because she thought she had, you know, blood with Alex and with Juliet. And then she's the one, you know, that kind of to me was left out of this whole picture, mm-hmm. you know, because we found all these new people she was a bit older. She's a bit older than Juliet. And mm-hmm. she kind of halfway raised them too. You know, she helped a lot with them. And I felt like she maybe struggled the most through mm-hmm. all of this.
Right, right.
But we're still in contact all the time. Mm-hmm. And that, again, it didn't seem to change anything for her, really. And it's changed nothing for us.
Mm-hmm. So this now is something that everyone who's listening to this segment now, those who came to the StoryCorps listening session some months ago, and you know those who will be listening to this through the podcast, they're going to come to know about it. Is this something now, Juliet, that you have talked about with your friends at length? I mean, have they asked questions about it?
Yeah, I mean, I find myself if people have been friends with me through this process, you know, I'm a very open person, so they've been getting, you know, sort of doses in real time as things progress. But for those that I'm like maybe reconnecting with or something, and this is all at once, it's a sort of larger than life, you know, stranger than fiction sort of story. So mm-hmm. it's a lot to take in. But I love sharing it because it is such a ultimately happy, expanding family story. And I've got two half siblings that I have found as well through this process, and absolutely love them.
Yeah. Rebecca, have people asked you questions since, especially maybe those you've known for some years? They're coming to find out about this. What has their response been?
The two good friends that I told, I mean, they were obviously aware of everything as we moved along, and they were just incredibly supportive. But I have to say that I found a lot of my friends, I don't think were that interested, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I know. I just, you know, just like, oh, okay. You know, and then if I wanted to go into the story, you know, and tell the whole story, it's a long story.
Yeah, you know,
and I just hated to do that to people. So I would just cut the story real short and just, everybody, we just moved on. So, yeah, I found that pretty interesting, too, that there was such a lack of interest.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll change after today.
Yeah, maybe.
So, Juliet, both of your children you have had with John Henry.
Mm-hmm.
How old are they now?
Trad is 4.5, mm-hmm. and Fritz just turned 3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they are old enough to maybe ask some questions. insofar as, you know, this family, it's not a secret now. How is it that the two of you plan on sharing this story with the boys? I mean, will it be a very intimate conversation akin to what you experienced in the StoryCorps trailer? Is it just sort of part of your family story now? Will there be a diagram?
Well, there definitely going to have to be a diagram because the family tree is 3 or 4 dimensions, so it's a little tough to describe. But, you know, they know all of the half-siblings, you know, as aunts and uncles, and they've met all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think for them, it'll just be their normal life. They'll mm-hmm. grow up with these people that are aunties and uncles and love them and play with them. And, you know, they might be the only kids on that in that generation as well, on both sides potentially. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like there's too many other half siblings that are interested in making families of their own. And John Henry's an only child too, so they have a lot of concentrated attention,
mm-hmm.
which is really magical. But this is all they've known.
Yeah, yeah.
And your bio dad doesn't have any biological grandchildren except yours.
Does not. That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll certainly share the story because, you know, without Trad's birth, none of this would be in motion.
Mm-hmm. So the final question, I mean, is the concept of family now somehow different after learning everything, you know, meeting new family members, Juliet?
Family is magical and ever evolving for us. And I think what's also exciting for me and Alex is that we can have a new sibling pop up into our lives at any point. And I love that endless possibility.
Mm-hmm. And I have absolutely enjoyed meeting. I've met Juliet's half-sister, Johanna, and I've met Alex's half-sister, Cheyenne. But I have not met any of the men yet. But I'm just thrilled to have them because now they're my daughters too, right?
Yeah.
So family is kind of what you make it.
Right. Rebecca Massey and Juliet Simone are mother and daughter, both mothers of two in different ways and also similar. Juliet and Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. And again, happy early Mother's Day.
Thank you
so much.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.